The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Let's spend a little time this evening both on the Parsha and something in reference to Hanukkah also. A few points on the Parsha. Now this is speaking after the brothers came down to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, to buy grain. And there unexpectedly, the one who was acting as Paro's viceroy, Mishnah LeMelech, was Yosef the brother. And he recognized them, but they did not recognize him. And he told them that they must go back. He will hold one prisoner, Shimon, and they must go back and bring back their youngest brother, Binyamin. And only then will he release Shimon and sell them grain. And then they came back with Binyamin. And then was the whole episode of the silver cup. They found the silver cup in Binyamin's bag. It was placed there. And now they all came back to Paray. And they were going to hold Binyamin prisoner. And this was a tremendous tragedy for the brothers. Because Yaakov Avinu didn't want to send Binyamin down to begin with. Because he said that his wife Rachel had two, Yosef and Binyamin. Yosef enenu. Yosef is not here. If I lose Binyamin, I will lose everything. So Vayigash Elov Yehuda. So Yehuda went forward. Vayomer bi Adoni, yedabino abdecho dover beozne Adoni, val yichar apecho bi abdecho ki chomecho ki paroi. Something wrong? So Yehuda went forward to Paroi. To Yosef, and he was ready to go le melchoma for war. And he told him, "Ki kamecha ke paray, you are like paray." Rashi brings the medrash. What does it mean? You are like paray. Seif chalil keisolav b'tzaras kamei shaloka paray al yedei ziknosi sora al laila achas she okfa. You, the same thing will happen to you that happened to your predecessor, Pare. Because many years ago, when Abraham came to Mitzrayim, to Egypt because of a famine, Pare took Sora, he said, my grandmother. And one night he kept her. And just for keeping her back one night, he was stricken with Saras, with a plague which was similar to leprosy. The same thing will happen to you because you are keeping back Binyamin. So the Meforshim ask a question here. Why? What is the significance of Tzaras? Why this plague? And various answers are given. The Gurai writes that in his opinion, the reason why Yehuda said that you will be stricken with this saras, with this plague, because the Medrash tells us in Parshas Metzera, Medrash Rabbah, Bishvil Yudvorim Negoim Boim. This plague of saras, this was an ancient disease, which we call leprosy, but it's not leprosy. And it was a disease, a very rare disease. And what would happen to the person that his limbs would start becoming destroyed. They would waste away. The Gemara says, Bishvil Yudvorim Negoim Boim, for 10 reasons, Negoim, this disease can come upon a person. Today it's extinct. And the Chazal, the Meforshim, tell us various reasons as to why. But there were 10 reasons why that it could come upon a person. And one of the reasons is if a person takes something which is not his. Theft. And the Medrash brings a proof from Uziyahu. Uziyahu was stricken with this plague, lefi shalakach kuhuna latzmai, because he took kuhuna latzmai. He took the priesthood for himself, which he wasn't deserving of. So therefore, if a person takes something that's not his, this is one of the things that can cause leprosy. Now here, Paroi took Sora, took a woman that was not his. She wasn't fit for him. She was fit for Abraham. Therefore, he was stricken with this leprosy. And you now want to take Binyamin. And Binyamin is one of the Shvatim, one of the 12 sons of Yaakov. What does he have to do with you? He has no link that he should become your slave. So therefore, you also will be stricken with leprosy. Why does leprosy come for this particular thing? So the Gemara writes, everyone is given what is best for him in the eyes of the Almighty. Everyone is given a specific portion. Everyone has his own chelik. And that's for him. A chelik, a portion that is miyuchid, that's set aside for a chaver, for another person, that's not his. And everyone has their own gvul, they have their own boundaries. When you go into someone else's boundaries to take something that was not a portion to you, you're taking something which doesn't belong to you, and something which was not set aside for you, and something which is not befitting to you. And it's something that's strange to you. And if a person does this, then the punishment that he would receive would be this disease. Because this disease is a dover zor, this disease is something which is very unnatural. And if a person takes something that's not set aside for himself, that means it's something which is unnatural to him. So the judgment would be that he would receive a disease which is very unnatural to the human being. That's why leprosy comes for this type of theft, one of the 10 things which bring on this plague. And this is what Yehuda told Paroi. Kamecha ke Paroi, which he told Yosef. You're like Paroi. Just like Paroi, your predecessor, was stricken with tsaras, with this plague, because he took my grandmother, my great-grandmother, Sora. So you also, if you will take Binyamin. From here we can learn a great principle. People should not desire what is not set aside for them. Everybody was given a portion in this world. There were certain areas that a person was given the right to try to seek more. When it comes to mitzvahs, mitzvah la yizba mitzvah. It says on Moshe Rabbeinu that he was never satisfied to do enough mitzvahs. Even when he was dying, his greatest request from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was that he should be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara in Masechta Seita says, what did he want to go into Eretz Yisrael so much for? V'chilechol mipiryo. Moshe Rabbeinu, that saw more than any other prophet, was he so interested to go into Eretz Yisrael to eat from his fruits? Why did it bother so much Moshe Rabbeinu that only if he could go into Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara says, because there are a great many mitzvahs that cannot be fulfilled outside of Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to taste from those mitzvahs. So the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have enough mitzvahs. He could argue someone else, but Moshe had so many mitzvahs. So the Gemara brings, that's what Shlomo HaMelech wrote, Eiv mitzvahs, Le'yizba mitzvah. That someone who has such a great love for the mitzvah will never be satisfied with mitzvahs. Torah, perhaps there's a designated portion for each person, perhaps. But still he was given the right to strive, to seek whatever he could in Torah. But when it comes to other things, then a person was given the right to strive for what comes to him. But more than that, that's not his. Especially if it belongs to someone else. If it's something of a value, of a physical value, if it's something that's tangible, or if it's a honor and a glory that belongs to someone else. And many people think that if they'll take it for themselves, they'll be glicklich. They'll have great benefit from it. They won't have benefit from it. It's not theirs. You can't have benefit from something that's not yours. It doesn't fit. Anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the person fits him, becomes a part of him. Just like a person buys a garment, he buys a suit, he buys a pair of shoes. it can be the best garment, if the best pair of shoes, if it's not the right size, it's not going to do him any good. So what belongs to the person is his right fit. If he takes something that belongs to someone else, that's going to be very strange unto him. That's going to be very unnatural to him. And the judgment for this is saras, this plague, which is a very rare and unnatural disease. That's why saras comes when a person takes something that's not his. After Yosef saw what was going on, and the brothers were all mischarit, that they were all full of regret, and they said that this is what's happening to us here is what because we did, we weren't compassionate towards our brother Yosef. So then it states, "V'le'yochol Yosef li'sapek lechol anitzavim olam." Yosef could not; he could not bear this anymore. He couldn't take it anymore, and he said, "Everyone should go out." And he said, "Ani Yosef," and he revealed himself to his brothers. "I am Yosef. Ha'ed of Yichoy is my father still alive?" And the brothers couldn't answer him. They couldn't say anything before him, because they were so taken aback, so stunned. They were shocked. So Yosef said, "Come close. Gishuna elai v'igoshu. Come close to me." And he said, "Vayemer ani Yosef achichem. I am Yosef, your brother. Asher mechartem esi mitzroima." This is in Pasuk Dalet, in Memhei Pasuk Dalet. "I am Yosef, your brother, who you sold to Mitzrayim, to Egypt. And now do not feel sad, and do not be angry that you sold me here, because you sold me here for a great purpose. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me here for a great purpose, in order to bring life to this nation, because it's now 2 years of famine in this land. And there's another 5 years that there will be no harvest. Kodesh Baruch Hu set me before you in order that I can make a place for you, and to make a salvation for you." This is what Yosef told his brothers. Now the Chazal tell us that the brothers didn't believe him. They didn't believe him. They thought he was an impostor. And rightly so. Here it was 22 years. It says in Parshas Vayeshev, in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, that Yosef was 17 years old when they sold him. Ben Shvai Esrei Shono Hoyerei Asecho. He was 17 years old. Then it tells us in one of the past parashas, in Miketz, that Yosef was 30 years old when he became the king of Egypt. So 13 years had gone by. And then there were the 7 good years. So that's 20 years. And then there were the 2 years of famine. He said 2 years of famine. So it's 22 years. So for 22 years, they didn't hear, they didn't see or hear of Yosef. They didn't know what happened to him. Very likely they might have given up hope, although we see when they came down to Egypt, they had undertaken upon themselves to look for him, and if they would find him, to ransom him with all money possible. But if he was alive, then they thought for sure he was a slave somewhere. Now all of a sudden, the mighty king of Egypt, this viceroy, is telling him, I'm Yosef. And this is the man who's empowered with such strength that all of Egypt was coming to buy from him, and all of Canaan, all of Eretz Yisrael was coming to buy from him. This is the power that he had. And later on it tells us that he gathered in all the money, and they didn't have any more money, so they sold their animals, and then they sold their land, and then they sold themselves. So they didn't believe him. They thought he was an impostor. So therefore, the Pasuk tells us a little later, Pasuk Yud Beis, V'hine einechem ra'os ve'eine ochi v'nyomin kifi hamadaber alechem. He says, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Binyamin, kifi hamadaber alechem, that I am the mouth that is speaking to you. What does this mean? When Yosef saw that they didn't believe him, so he gave them two signs. Einechem ra'os, he showed them that he was nimol, he showed them that he was circumcised. That this would be a sign that he was their brother. And then, kifi amadaber aleichem, that the mouth is speaking to you, he spoke to them in Loshon HaKodesh. So he gave them these two signs that I am Yosef, and it was only after that did they believe him. This is what Rashi brings from the Chazal. The Ramban asks, firstly, what is the proof for the fact that he showed that he was circumcised? The Yishmaelim were circumcised. Yishmael was also commanded in circumcision in Milah, the son of Abraham, and his people were circumcised. And also the Bnei Keturah were commanded in circumcision. The Bnei Keturah were these children that Abraham had from Hagar. After Sarah died and he brought back Hagar, she was called in Keturah. And he had children. Those children also were commanded in Bris Milah and circumcision. And that's why we find many of the Arabs today circumcised. So what is the proof? And secondly, the proof in Lashon HaKodesh that he spoke Hebrew. What's the proof? The Ramban says that the people of Canaan and Eretz Yisrael also spoke Hebrew. So what is the proof? Maybe he was a Canaanite, or maybe he had learned it from someone. And perhaps he was an impostor. Now this, that the Ramban says that the people in Canaan also spoke Hebrew, one might think, why? Why did they speak Hebrew? Hebrew, Loshon HaKodesh, was the language the sages tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with. When he said, Yihi Or, let there be light, this was all in Loshon HaKodesh, all in Hebrew. And most likely, this is the language that he spoke to in Adam HaRishon, the first man. So it was not the Jews who first introduced Hebrew. And most likely then, this was the language that Noah knew. And the fact is, the Chazal, the sages, bring the proof that Adam HaRishon, the first man, spoke Hebrew because he was commanded to name all the animals. And he looked at them and called each animal he identified each animal with its proper description. And those names were in Hebrew. And the Hebrew name is the proper description, while a translation would not be. So the language of Loshon HaKodesh was known. And then Shem, who was the righteous son of Noah, went to live in Canaan, which was at that time Eretz Yisrael. It was called Canaan at that time. So very likely he was the righteous son. He carried the tradition of Loshon HaKodesh of Hebrew, and the people learned it. So therefore the Ramban asked, so what is the proof? The Maral in the Gurai asked another kasha. He says, what is the proof in the fact that he was circumcised, that this was Yosef? All of Egypt was circumcised. Because before, in Parshas Miketz, the Torah tells us in Mem Aleph, Posig Nun Hei, Vatirav Kol Eretz Mitzrayim Vayitzak Oem El Paro El Alochem. Famine went through the entire Mitzrayim and they cried to Paro for bread. Vayema Paro Lechol Mitzrayim Lechu El Yosef, and Paro said, go to Yosef, Asheyem Elachem Tasu, whatever he says to you, you shall do. What does it mean, whatever he says to you, you shall do? So Rashi brings from the sages, Because when they came to Yosef and they said, give us bread, so Yosef said, if you will circumcise yourselves, I will give you bread. Otherwise, I'm not going to sell you. I'm not going to sell to you. So they came to Paro to complain. They said, this is what the man wants from us. So Paro said, Loma leitz about him bar. Why didn't you store away grain? We told everyone that there's going to be 7 good years and then 7 bad years of famine. So why didn't you store away grain? So they said, we did store it away, but it rotted on us. So Pare told them then, if so, you better listen to him. He decreed on your grain that it should rot. He can decree on you that you will die also. So that's what it means. Asheyem alechem ta'asu. Whatever he tells you to, do. So Yosef, there's a reason why. But the fact is, Yosef had all of Egypt circumcised. So what is the proof of the fact that Yosef was circumcised, that he was his brother Yosef, all of Egypt was? Then the Ramban asks another question. He says a better sign he should have given, he should have told them the details of the sale. He should have told the brothers, I'm Yosef, the one who you sold, like it states. And then tell them exactly when it took place, where it took place, how it took place. And from here would be a proof to them that this was Yosef. So these are questions that bother the Meforshim. So the Gwari says as follows. He says the details of the sale would not be a proof. Because it's common that whatever happens to people, they tell over to other people. It would have been very common that Yosef would have been sold into slavery and he would have told his friends exactly what happened to him. So here there could be a Rama, an imposter, that heard from Yosef exactly what happened. And now he's telling these people, I'm Yosef, and he tells them exactly what happened. But on the other hand, language of a person, or circumcision of a person, that's not a sign as to what took place, that's a sign, begufa, that's a sign in the person himself. The Gemara tells us, we have a halacha. There are times when we need an identification. For example, cholila, if a person is found dead, and we have to identify who he is. It's relevant to inheritance. It's relevant to whether his wife can remarry. The person is lost and now we find someone dead. So there are gemaras on to how you can identify this person. So the gemara says it must be a simen begufa. You must have a sign in the person's body, in the person himself. For example, parts of ponim. If you can identify his face, then that's a good identification. If there's a specific mark on his body, that's a good identification. But it says kelim, the godim, let's say that you identify his clothing. That's not a good identification. Even if he has on 10 begodim, 10 garments, and we can substantiate that all 10 belong to the person who we think he might be, that's not a good identification. Why? Chayshina l'sheilo, the Gemara says, because maybe he borrowed the clothing. Maybe it's a different man and he borrowed the clothing. So therefore, we must have a simen begufa. We must have a sign in the person himself, not other signs which are not begufa. He says here, if you will tell him the protea machira, exactly what took place in the sale, that's not a sign in the person's body. That could come from other people. That Yosef could have told others, and others told others, and now someone heard about it, and he's saying it over. But when it comes to the language of the person, language is a certain identity of the person's nation, because every nation has their own language. And circumcision is an identity. This is in the person's body himself. So therefore, these are better signs. But we said that the Yishmaelim were also circumcised, and the Canaanim could also speak Hebrew. This is true. But they only could do one. The Yishmaelim were circumcised, but they didn't speak Hebrew. The Canaanim spoke Hebrew, but they weren't circumcised. That's why Yosef showed them both. He showed them that he was circumcised, and he showed them that he could speak Hebrew. And that's what it says here, a nechem rosh, you see for yourself, and kifia madaber, and you hear me speak. Because there was no nation that both was circumcised and spoke Hebrew. See, only the children of Yaakov. They were the only ones. So therefore, he gave them these two signs, and it's very likely he told them all the details of the sale also. But that itself wasn't sufficient. That's why he gave them these two signs also. Either Kasha, we asked, but all of Egypt was circumcised? Well, first of all, they didn't speak Hebrew. But aside from that, that wouldn't be a Kasha. Because why was all of Egypt circumcised? They were all circumcised because this man was the one who decreed that they should be. So that itself was a proof. He had them, so he's the one who originated bris milah, circumcision in Mitzrayim. So from the fact that they were circumcised also is a proof that this must be from the children of Yaakov. In addition to the fact that he could speak Loshon HaKodesh. Dula, could you open some windows? It's very hot. Can you get some of the upper windows? Now, while we're speaking on this subject, do you want some windows open back there? All right, now, while we're speaking on this subject, there's another very interesting chazal on this that Yosef knew Loshon HaKodesh. The chazal tell us that not only did Yosef know Loshon HaKodesh, but Yosef knew all of the 70 languages. When the Almighty created the world, and he created Adam HaRishon, and then came the flood and destroyed the world, Noach and his three sons were alone left. From Noach's three sons, Benafotsu Kolo Oretz branched out the entire world. The sages trace that from Noach's three sons came 70. 70 sons. And each one fathered a different nation. Each one fathered and founded a different nation. And these were the 70 basic nations of the world. After that, every nation is linked to these 70. Each nation had its own language. Each nation had its own language. So just as there were 70 nations, there were 70 languages. There were 70 nations and one. The one nation was Klal Yisrael. They are not counted amongst the other nations of the world. Lo Yishashev, it says, they shall not be counted amongst the others. So there are 70 and one, and there are 70 languages and Loshon HaKodesh. Now the Gemara tells us that Yosef knew all of the 70 languages and Loshon HaKodesh. Parai knew all of the 70 languages, but he did not know Loshon HaKodesh. Rashi brings this in next week's Parsha. Parshas Vayechi, in Parshas Vayechi, in Breishis Nun, Posek Hei and Vov, after Yaakov dies, Ovi Hishbiani Lemor, Yosef came to Paro and said, my father made me swear. Hine Anechi Meis B'Kivri Asher Korisi Li Be'eretz Kanan Shometik Bereini, that I, Yaakov, will die. You shall bury me in our burial place in Eretz Canaan. So therefore Yosef asked permission from Pare, if I can go up now and bury my father, and then return. So Pare said, go and bury your father like you have sworn to him. What does it mean, like you have sworn to him? Why didn't he just answer him, go and bury your father? So the sages say that if you didn't take an oath, I wouldn't let you. Pare was not interested that Yosef would leave Egypt. Maybe he was afraid he wouldn't come back. And he wanted him there. He says, if you didn't take the oath, I wouldn't let you. But since you took the oath, then kasherish be'echo, like you took the oath, go ahead. Go. Why? So Rashi brings in the Gemara and says, Daf Lamed Vov. Because yorei leimer avor al asfua. I'm afraid to tell you to transgress the oath. Shelayemar im kein, because lest you will tell me then, ever al asfua shenishbati l'cho, that I will transgress the shvua that I took to you. If I will tell you, Yosef, to not keep the oath, then you will tell me that you will not keep my oath either. What oath was that? Shelayegale al loshen akedish ani makir eidif al shivim loshen. I made you take an oath that you will not tell the people that you know a language more than I know. Yosef, I'm afraid you will say, if I don't let you keep the oath, I'm afraid you will say that I will tell the people now, contrary to my oath that I took with you, that I know a language more than you. You only know the 70 languages, and I know the 70 languages in Loshon HaKodesh. So therefore, Parai said, I'm afraid to have you transgress the oath, therefore go bury your father. Now what is the meaning of this? Parai knew 70 languages. Yosef knew 70 languages and Loshon HaKodesh. Parai was very fearful of this. And he made him swear that you'll never tell the people, because they'll see you know a language more than I do. So what? And the Guraya asks in Parshas Vayechi, why wasn't Parai afraid that they'll say Yosef is a greater chochem? When Yosef told them, he interpreted the dreams, he said, Parai said, can we find such a wise man in this land? So why wasn't he afraid of that? So he says something which is very deep. Parai held himself not only for a king, a monarch, but for an all-encompassing king. He held himself as a king of the world. And perhaps he might have been the mightiest monarch in the world at that time. So he held himself for a great king, all encompassing. Now for a king to rule, he must rule over the nation. And to rule over the nation, he must rule over the language. Because language very closely identifies with the soul of the nation. We once gave a long shir, it was before Yom Kippur, that perhaps the main power of a person is his power of speech. So the way a nation expresses themselves, that is a very basic identification and essence of that nation. And just like to be a king over a people, you must rule over the people, you must rule over the language also. And therefore, Parai made it a point to know all of the 70 languages. Because he held himself as a ruler over all of the 70 nations. And we have sources in the Parsha where he held himself even for a god. The people used to think he was a god. And therefore, it didn't bother him so much from the fact that Yosef might have been wiser than him. Every king had his wise men, his advisors. See, his cabinet. So it didn't bother him that much that Yosef was wiser. But if people would realize that Yosef ruled over all of the 70 languages and Loshon HaKodesh also, then the people might think that this man is a greater ruler, a greater monarch than Yosef. And then Parai. Yes. And then they might rebel against Parai. So therefore he swore Yosef to secrecy, that you must never reveal this to the people. You must never reveal that you know Loshon HaKodesh. From this, incidentally, we see that therefore when he spoke Loshon HaKodesh to the brothers, he must have done it secretly. Kifi Amadaber, I'm speaking to you in Hebrew, this must have been done secretly, because otherwise he didn't speak Loshon HaKodesh, because the people were not supposed to know that he knew this. Now, why was it that Parai couldn't learn Loshon HaKodesh? If he learned all of the languages, why didn't he learn Loshon HaKodesh also? And why was it that Yosef knew Loshon HaKodesh and all of the languages? The answer is Yosef by nature was a ruler. We spoke about this in the past. Yosef was a melech. Whether Pare would have appointed him to be king or not, Yosef was a king. This was the greatness of Yosef. And the father saw this in him. And that's why he separated him from the brothers. And that's why he gave him a ksenas passim, a coat of many colors, to designate that he's the king over the brothers. And this is what created so much jealousy amongst the brothers. Because first of all, maybe the brothers didn't like them. But secondly, they had in mind that Yehuda would be the melech. We see later on that from Yehuda came Malvolochim. David HaMelech came from Yehuda. Actually, we find there were two kings in Israel. There was Melech Yehuda, which was from Yehuda. And then there was Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh, these were the kings from Yosef. But Yaakov Avinu had seen great, great powers of Malchus, of kingship in Yosef. And in one of the brochas, he calls him Nizir Echov. Nizir means the crown of the brothers. And this was Yosef's dream. Yosef's dream was that all of the sheaves will bow to him. And all of the stars will bow to him. And the sun and the moon will start bow to him. And the brothers said, HaMolech Timlech Aleinu, HaMoshel Timshel Bono, you will be king over us. You will rule over us. And when Yaakov saw what was happening, he hushed him up. He told him to be silent. But it says, Avol Yaakov Shomar Esadover, but he sighed to himself quietly. He waited for the time when it would be fulfilled, because he knew that Joseph had these powers. And it was fulfilled. It was fulfilled now. All of the brothers came and bowed to him. And we see that he ruled in a degree even over his father, because it says in our parasha, Vichilkalti, that he supported, he sustained the entire family, the father too, came to eat from him. So the dreams were fulfilled. Now Yosef's kingship came from a very, very high place. See, this was the power that Yosef had. We went into this at length 2 weeks ago. That Yosef had this power from Yaakov Avinu, because he was Ben Zikunim Hulay. He was the greatest son of Yaakov Avinu. And he was the most similar to Yaakov. And Yaakov was a king. Yaakov's image was engraved on the Kiseh HaKoved, on the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he had the splendor of Odom HaRishon. Now these were the qualities that Yosef had. So therefore Yosef, his source of kingship came from a very high place. And therefore he was Sholat, he was ruled over all of the languages of the world and Loshon HaKodesh, which indicated that he was a proper ruler over the entire world. And this is what Pare saw. Didn't bother Pare the fact that there was one more language. He saw that Yosef was a higher level in kingship over him. And Pare was not. And this, he was terrified if the people would find this out. So therefore he swore him to secrecy. Pare, on the other hand, was a very, very great monarch. A very great monarch. But he wasn't to the level where he could rule every nation and Klal Yisrael. That not. And therefore he could never learn Loshon HaKodesh. It wasn't simply by coincidence that he didn't learn Loshon HaKodesh. He tried to learn it. If he was capable of learning all of the 70 languages, he should have been capable of learning Hebrew also. He tried, but he couldn't, because it was too far from him. Doesn't mean that someone who happens to learn Hebrew is going to be on that level. It means that he had conquered all of the languages, but he still had lacked this, which was a sign that he wasn't the monarch over the entire world. So that was the discussion, or this is what took place between Yosef and Pare in regards to the 70 languages. We'll go to another point in the Sedra. When they came to their father, they came to their father, and he decided that he'll come down to Egypt. So the Torah tells us, this was in Bereishis, this is in Bereishis Mem Zayin, Mem Vav, Posuk Chof Ches. As they were coming down, Yaakov came down with 70 people. As they were coming down, before they came to Egypt, Yaakov sent Yehuda ahead to Yosef. Laheris lefonav geishna. So the simple meaning means to organize. Goshen. Goshen was the land where Parai set aside for this family, and it was from the best of Egypt. So in order to settle everything, and things should be settled before they come, so Yaakov sent down Yehuda. See? He sent down Yehuda laheris lefonav geishna to settle Goshen, and Vayavo Arts of Goshen. Then they came to the land of Goshen. This is the simple meaning. This is what Rashi tells us. Then Rashi brings a Medrash Agoda, but there's a Drosho. Lehairis Lefonov. Lehairis means, comes from the word Torah, which means Hora, instruction. Lesakin Le Beis Talmud, Shemishom Teitze Hero. Yaakov sent down Yehuda that he should establish a yeshiva. Shemishom teitzahiro, that from there will go out the instruction of Torah. Wherever Yaakov went, he had a yeshiva. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Yuma that me'elam leposku yeshiva me'aveseinu, that a yeshiva never ceased from our fathers. It says Avram had a yeshiva, where he sat and learned Torah and he taught Torah. And Eliezer, his servant, had a yeshiva. And says Bavram Zokain, Bobe Yomim Zokain means someone who is learning and teaching Torah. And Yitzchok had a yeshiva. And it brings Yaakov had a yeshiva. Me'elam leposki yeshiva me'aveseinu. Our fathers always had a yeshiva. Now Yaakov was very worried. Here he's forced to leave Eretz Yisrael and to go down to Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim was the most abominable of all of the lands. Of all of the lands, the greatest abominations. There was Tumah, there were impurities. And there were te'evas, there were abominations, and there was kishuf, there was sorcery. See? And he's taking his whole family there. He was very worried. So therefore, he wanted to make sure there would be naturally his yeshiva. So he sent Yehuda. Sholach Yehuda, Yehuda sholach lefonav, he sent Yehuda to Yosef lahayres. Lahayres means, la'aseh beis talmud lahayro. See, to make a yeshiva for hayro, for instruction. Now, we can learn a few things from here. Firstly, my Rebbe, that tells the Rosh Yeshiva, the Mordechai Gifter, asks a kasha here, he writes it in the Sefer. So why did Yaakov send Yehuda? He should have sent Levi, because the Rambam writes that Yaakov had made Levi in charge of the yeshiva. Rambam writes that Yaakov separated Levi from the other brothers and said, you must always sit and learn, you and your children, and teach Torah as a guarantee that the Torah of Avraham Avinu will not be forgotten. And he commanded the other brothers to see that Levi will be free and will have enough sustenance so he and his children could sit and learn Torah. And Kachoyo, this is what happened, he said, in Eretz Yisrael, in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, they never served Avodah Zorah. And this is why the Kahanim and the Levim came out from Shevet Levi. So you should have sent Levi, why Yehuda? Or perhaps Yisochar. Yisochar were Yedei Vino. Yisochar were brilliant, brilliant people. In all of the, it says that from Yisochar came out 200 Rosh Sanhedrios. That of all the courts in Eretz Yisrael, 200 of them were the heads of courts in Eretz Yisrael in later generations. Great Talmidei Chachomim came from Yisochar, so he should have sent Yisochar. Why Yehuda? See, this is a very good answer. What was Yehuda's quality? Yehuda's quality was Malchus, was that of kingship. From Yehuda, like Yaakov later gives the brocha to Yehuda, that Le'yosu shevet mi Yehuda, the staff of leadership should never cease from Yehuda. From Yehuda came David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. Yehuda was Malchus. So he says, he writes as follows. To teach Torah, that you need the power of Torah. To maintain Torah, that you must have the power of Torah. But here we were not talking of teaching Torah, or we were not talking of Egypt was the land that had the greatest contradiction to Torah. And this is what we needed. For that, you need more, not only power of Torah, you need power of Malchus, of kingship. And therefore he sent Yehuda. If there was Torah there already, or if there was a yeshiva there, if Yaakov would have needed a Rosh Yeshiva, he would have sent Yisachar. He would have sent Levi. But there was nothing there. Not only there was nothing in Egypt, it was a land totally contrary to Torah. Outside of Yosef and his family, it was a land totally contrary to Torah. For this he needed the power of a king, the gvura, the strength of a melech. So he sent Yehuda. That's one thing that we learn. A second principle we learn, and this is very, very important. When did he send them? It states, "Yehuda sholach lefonav al Yosef leheres lefonav geishne vayavo arze geishne." Yehuda he sent before him to Yosef to establish a house of learning. Then they came to Goshen. He sent him before. What did he send him before, though? They were on the way, and he sent him before. Why didn't he wait till everyone got there? We see when it comes to Torah, and Jews come to a new land, they must not wait till they get there. And this has been a great dangerous pitfall many times. Many times we see in history that Jews come to a new land. They did not establish Torah immediately. But because when you come to a land, all of a sudden you're hit with 1,000 difficulties. You have to adjust to the land, you have to adjust to the language, you have to adjust to the panoso, you have to find home, you have to find shelter, and so forth and so forth. And in we have many historical precedents that when Jews would come to a new land, there would be several lost generations. It would take many generations before Torah would establish itself. And during that time, generations would be lost. And this is something that Yaakov Avinu knew. He wasn't going to wait till he got to Egypt and was living in Egypt and then start talking about establishing Torah. Bes Yehuda sholach lefonov. Yehuda he sent before him to establish a Beis Hayroah, to establish a place of Torah. So that when he and his family would come, a yeshiva would already be there. Not that when he and his family would come, then he's going to have to worry about shelter for his family. Then he's going to have to worry about sustenance for his family and everything else, and then he'll talk about Torah. This is a very important lesson. That when a Jew goes to a new place, Torah he has to establish before he comes there. And therefore, sholach lefon. These are a few points on this week's Sedra. Let's go to one final point, which is relative to Hanukkah. Could you give me the Masechta Shabbos, please? Thank you. Tonight is the eighth day of Hanukkah. And the eighth day of Hanukkah traditionally is given an importance greater than the rest of the days. Usually the commentaries refer to it as Zeis Chanukah. They refer to it as Zeis Chanukah because in the parsha that we learn tomorrow of the Sefer Torah, it begins with Zeis Chanukah. But anyone who follows the learning will see that it's a much more elaborate learning that takes place every day of Chanukah. And Zeis Chanukah, the last day, always had a special significance. Let's see if we can understand why. The Gemara tells us in the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Chof Aleph Amud Beis, Tana Rabbanan Mitzvah Chanukah Neri Shubesei. The rabbis taught that the mitzvah of Chanukah, the basic mitzvah of Chanukah, is to light one candle for the head of the household. The head of the household lights one candle, and that's sufficient for the entire household. That's the basic mitzvah. Ba'mahadrin, if you want to beautify the mitzvah, to do the mitzvah, fulfill the mitzvah in a better way, ner el chol echad ve'echad, then every member of the household should light one candle. Ba'mahadrin mina mahadrin, and if you want to beautify it even more, then Beishamai Imrin. Beishamai says, Yemrishen Madlik Shmeina. Beishamai says, the first day you light 8 candles. Mikan ve'elech peches. The second day 7. The third day 6. The fourth day 4. And so forth until down to 1. Ubeisilo Imrin Yemrishen Madlik Achas. Beisilo says, no. The first day you light 1 candle. Mikan ve'elech meshiv ve'elech. The second day 2 candles, the third day 3 candles, until the eighth day 8 candles. So this is a Machlekes Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and we paskin like Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says that the basic mitzvah is the head of the household should light one candle each night. That's all. Mahadrin, if you want to do the mitzvah a little better, then every member of the household can light one candle. Mahadrin mina mahadrin, if you want to do the mitzvah even better, then you don't light one candle, but you light candles corresponding to the night of Chanukah. There's a shaila, this means on the balabai, so this means every member of the house. But, at least the balabai, you light candles corresponding to the night of Chanukah. The machlek is beishamai and beishilo, though, what does it mean corresponding to the night of Chanukah? To how many nights are left? In other words, the first night, Beishamai says there's 8 nights left, therefore you light 8 candles, the second night 7 candles, or to how many nights have gone by. Beisilo says the first night 1 candle, the second night 2 candles, the third night 3 candles. So forth. And then they bring their proofs. Now, when they want to bring their proofs, the Gemara goes into a discussion. So, it states that the reason why Beis Hillel disagrees with Beis Shammai, that you shouldn't light 8 candles the first night and 7 the second, but rather 1, 2, 3, 4, because we have a cloud, Malin Bekedish Vein Merin, that whenever you do something, you do it in a way which you go upwards, not downwards. That means you do the smallest thing first and build upwards, not the greater thing first, and you go downward. Malin Bekedish Vein Merin. All right, this is one of the reasons, for example, is brought that first you should put on your talis and then you put on your tefillin, because the tefillin is more kodesh than the talis. So you should do it in a way when you go upwards, not downwards. Not first put on your tefillin and then put on your talis. We can ask a question. If one gives some thought, there should not be any reason whatsoever why we should light more than one candle every night. There shouldn't be any reason whatsoever. Because the reason why we're lighting a candle is to commemorate the miracle that took place. And each night, one miracle took place. So why, for example, on the fourth night of Chanukah, should we light 4 candles? On the fourth, if each candle represents, if each candle represents one of the miracles, so why on the fourth night should we light 4 candles? 4 miracles didn't take place on the fourth night. The same miracle that took place on the first night is taking place on the fourth night and on the fifth night. So why is there reason to light 4 candles on the fourth night and 5 candles on the fifth night? It's a very good kasha, a very strong kasha. Now, another question we can ask, but this we have a simple answer for. We're just asking this to make us aware of the answer. Every night we make a brocha. Asher kichonu b'mitzvaseh b'tzivonu lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. We make a brocha to light the candle of Chanukah. Every night. All right. That we understand why. Because each night is another mitzvah to light a candle. And every time you do a mitzvah, the Chachomim said you should make a brocha. So therefore, every night we make a brocha. But what we can ask is that every night we make a brocha she'osad nisim laviseinu. That we make a brocha that HaKadosh Taken, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for making a miracle for us. Why must we make that every night? Why isn't it sufficient that brocha is made the first night? On the first night of Chanukah, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracle and finished. Why every night? What must we make? She'oso nisim? Say every night? All right, so on that we have an easy teretz, an easy answer. Because if there would have been one miracle on Chanukah, then we would have only made one brocha, she'oso nisim laviseinu, that Hashem made miracles for us. But there was not one miracle on Chanukah. There were eight miracles on Chanukah. The fact that the flask of shemen, of oil, burnt one day, let's say, 2 days, 3 days, each day was another miracle. The fact that each day was another miracle, that obligates us to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. Therefore, there were eight miracles in Chanukah. Therefore, we have to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu 8 times on Chanukah. And every night we make a brocha, she'osa nisim laviseinu bayomim ahim bezman hazeh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle for us. Okay. But now we would think, after we've come to the conclusion that there were 8 miracles on Chanukah, not one. So one would think that there were 8 miracles, each of equal dimension. Each miracle was similar to the one that took place before. In other words, one miracle repeated itself 8 times. That's what it seems. A miracle took place on the first night that it burnt. A miracle took place on the second night that it burnt. A miracle took place on the third night that it burnt. So Chanukah was a miracle that repeated itself 8 times. This is what it seems. That's not the case. In Shulchan Aruch it's brought that when we light the candles, which candle do you light first? If you put in, let's say it's the fourth night, and you put in 4 candles, which candle do you light first? So in Shulchan Aruch it's brought that you always light the new candle first. See, when you put the candles, so you should put them in from right to left. So the first night you put in 1 candle, the second night 2 candles, the third night the 3rd candle, the fourth night the 4th candle. But which one do you light first? You don't light the old candles first. You light always the additional candle. The additional candle you light first. Why? What's the reason? So in Shulchan Aruch it's brought in Simen Tofresh Einvov, at the end of the Simen, that you should always Yaskel Beneisef, always light the additional candle, the newest candle first. Why? Mimsi shetomin mevorach al anesif shuhum meire al anes shaharei beteisfes hayomim niteisif anes. Because this will show, this will designate that each night was not only another miracle, but was a greater miracle than took place the night before. If each night was merely a repetition of the same miracle which took place before, then you could light any candle. But on the fourth night, a greater miracle took place than on the third night. On the third night, a greater miracle took place on the second night. And in order to designate this, we light that candle first. So we see it wasn't a repetition of 8 miracles. It was 8 different miracles. Now why? Why on the fourth night was a greater miracle than the third night, and the third night was a greater miracle than the second night? Simple reason. I'll give you an example. If a person is driving a car and he has a gallon of gasoline, a gallon of petrol, and according to the statistics, according to the capability, let's say he can go 10 miles on it. If he can stretch that gallon to 15 miles, that's a miracle. If he could stretch it into an additional 5 miles, into 20 miles, it's a miracle. Now, is that second 5 miles an equal miracle of the first 5 miles? That second 5 miles is a greater miracle than the first 5 miles. To get an extra 5 miles out of a gallon of gasoline is one miracle. To get another 5 miles is a greater miracle. It's not just a repetition of what took place before. If he'll go another 5 miles, that's even a greater miracle. To get a flask of oil that can burn for one day to burn 2 days, that's one dimension of nasa miracle. To get it to burn 3 days, that's not a repetition of what took place yesterday. That's a greater miracle. That's a greater dimension than what took place yesterday. And so forth and so on. So therefore, we always light the new candle first to show that with each additional day, the dimension of the miracle grew. Not merely it grew proportionately. It grew greater than it was before. So not one miracle took place on Hanukkah 8 times. Okay? But there were 8 different dimensions of miracles on Hanukkah. Now there's more significance in the She'osu Nisim L'Avisenu that we make every day. Every night of Hanukkah, when we make a brocha, She'osu Nisim L'Avisenu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle, you made one miracle, now the same miracle you made a second day, the same miracle you made a third day. The miracle you made today, you didn't make yesterday. And the miracle you made today, you didn't make yesterday. Each miracle was a greater miracle. Now we can understand what the Gemara said. We asked, and the Gemara says that if you want to, one candle is sufficient for each day because you're designating the miracle. But if you want to beautify the miracle and do it properly, then you must light the number of candles in accordance to the number of days. In other words, on the third day you must light 3 candles. On the fourth day you must light 4 candles. Now we asked, why do you light 3 candles on the third day and four candles on the fourth day? Each day only one miracle happened. Today's the third day of Hanukkah. Today's the third day of Hanukkah. What does it have to do because there were 2 other days that already passed? Today only one miracle took place. So you should light only 1 candle every day? So the Gemara is telling us this. According to the basic law, if you light 1 candle every day, you're commemorating the miracle. But that's not really the proper way to do it. Why? Because you're not doing justice to the miracle. You're commemorating the third day and the fourth day miracle and the fifth day miracle all in the same manner. Well, the third day miracle was much greater than the second day miracle. And the fourth day miracle was much greater than the third day miracle. And the fifth day miracle was much greater than the fourth day miracle. So why should you commemorate them all in the same manner? Therefore, a mahadrin min a mahadrin, if you want to do the mitzvah properly, you have to show each day was a greater miracle. So therefore, the first day you light 1 candle. The second day, 2 candles to show that this was a double miracle. The third day, 3 candles to show that this was a 3-dimension miracle. And so forth and so on. So that explains to us why we light a different amount of candles each day and why there is room here to be mahadrin, why you can do better. According to this, on the 8th day of Hanukkah was the greatest miracle. The 8th day was not merely a repetition of what took place before, but the 8th day is the greatest miracle that took place on Hanukkah. If every day miracle was greater in proportion to the day before, then the greatest single miracle that took place was on the last day of Hanukkah. And therefore, the last day of Hanukkah will have a special significance. Because the miracle that took place on the last day of Hanukkah was greater in proportion than all of the other miracles. And it has a special significance. You know, we find that usually Yomim Tevim, are 7 days, according to the Torah. Sukkot is 7 days. That we have Shmini Atzeres, the Gemara says Chag Bifnei Atzme, that's another Yantif, that's not Sukkot. We don't sit in the Sukkah on that day, and we don't take the Lulav. Pesach is 7 days. And we never have a time, according to the Torah, where we say Hallel for 8 days. Because Sukkot is 7 days, Shmini Atzeres is another Yom. With the exception of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the only time that we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Hallel for 8 days. And there's a reason why all of the Yom Tovim are 7 days. What's the reason? Because 7 days signifies the complete cycle of the creation of the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 7 days. He worked 6 days, rested on the seventh day. This is the complete cycle of the world. And all of our Yom Tovim, therefore, run in a 7 day cycle. But here we have Hanukkah was 8 days. The miracle of Hanukkah, the Maral writes, as we spoke about last week, that the entire war of Hanukkah was between the Chochmas Yevonis, the wisdom of the Greeks, and the Chochmas Hatera, and the wisdom of Torah, that the entire victory of Hanukkah came from the level of the Torah of Klal Yisrael. Without the level of Torah, they could not have defeated the Greek Empire, because they rose to the greatest heights humanly possible in human physical wisdom. It was only because of the level of the Torah. The level of the Torah is beyond this world. And therefore it does not fit into the 7 day cycle of creation. Anything that fits into the 7 day cycle of creation means something that's from this world, or something that's attached to this world. Torah comes from a different world. And that's why we find that the Torah was represented in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Beis HaMikdosh. So there was the Heichal, which was one part of the Beis HaMikdosh. And then the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was the Oren. That's where the Ark was. There was the Torah, and there were the tablets, and there was a crown over the Ark which represented the crown of Torah. That was separated from the rest of the world because no one was allowed to go into that chamber except the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and on Yom HaKippurim. And the high priest was signified by the fact that he wore 8 garments. This represented he would go to a place which was beyond the cycle of creation, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in many places, Torah is signified with the number of 8. For one example, we have in Tehillim, where David HaMelech writes praises of the Torah. In Kapitel Kuf Yud Tes, he writes praises of the Torah with an Aleph Beis. He writes praises of the Torah with sentences beginning with an Aleph, sentences beginning with a Beis. Each one has 8 praises. Because when you want to praise this world, you praise it with 6, or you praise it with 7, because Shabbos became part of the world. But Torah is 8. And since this miracle came only from the source of Torah, like we say in the Al Anisim, we add, Zeidim biyad eifkei seresecho, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over the arrogant to those who occupied themselves with Torah. This miracle came from the source of Torah. It came from the source of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, it came from beyond this world. It came from a level of 8. And therefore, it created 8 dimensions in the miracle. 8 dimensions. It lasted for 8 days. The first day was 1 dimension, the second day was a greater dimension, the third day was a greater dimension. And Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are discussing how to commemorate those 8 dimensions. Beis Shammai says you must light the 8 candles the first day. And that Beis Hillel says a very important principle. Malin v'kedish mein merin. For a man to reach that dimension, he has to start at the bottom. You must start first at the first step. Then go up higher, then go up higher. Until you reach the highest level. Therefore, he says you light 1 candle the first day, 2 the second day, 3 the third day, and so forth. So we've explained many things. Firstly, we explained that Hanukkah was not one miracle. Otherwise, we would just make Al Anisim once, the Broch of Al Anisim. But Hanukkah was 8 miracles. Secondly, we explained that Hanukkah was not 8 miracles of equal dimension, each repeating themselves, but it was 8 different miracles. That's why when a person lights the Hanukkah licht, he shouldn't think another day of Hanukkah. It's not another day of Hanukkah, it's a different day of Hanukkah. 8 different miracles, 8 different dimensions of miracles, one greater than the other. Therefore, when we make the brocha l'anisim, each day we're making a brocha on a different dimension of miracle. Thirdly, we explain them, is what the Shulchan Aruch says, that's why you light all the time the new candle first. Because the new candle represents a greater dimension of miracle than you had the day before. And fourthly, we explain now, that explains to us why the Gemara says that you can fulfill the mitzvah with one candle each day, but there's a way to do it better. Light 6 candles on the 6th day, 7th and 7th day. Why should you light 6 on one day? You're commemorating one day of Hanukkah, not 6 days of Hanukkah. Just because it's the 6th day, you're not commemorating 6 days. Those days have gone already. So why light more than one candle on that day? So the answer is, the Gemara is saying that you can commemorate Hanukkah by lighting one candle each day. But that's not really the proper way to do it, because you're giving equal honor to each miracle then. And each miracle was greater than the previous one. So therefore, you must light a different amount of candles on each day to give more honor to the 5th day than you gave to the 4th, to the 6th day than you gave to the 5th. That's the proper way to do it. And therefore, the 8th day of Hanukkah, we mentioned, has a special significance, because the greatest miracle happened on the 8th day. And not only it was the greatest miracle that happened on the 8th day, but already it was a miracle that represented a dimension beyond this world. Because in this world we have the cycle of creation of 7 days. And all the Yom Tovim are 7 days. When we say Halal and Lahaydis Lahalel for 8 days, we're representing now a new dimension out of this world. And why? Because the source of this miracle was from Torah. Because it was only through Torah, Zedim B'Yareski Seresecho, that they were able to conquer the Greek Empire. And that comes from beyond this world. That comes from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Therefore, one must always remember that when it comes to Hanukkah, each day is not merely a repetitious miracle of the day before, but it's a greater miracle than took place the day before. And on the 8th day is the greatest miracle of all. And that's why Beis Hillel tells us here, he says, to reach that, you have to start low and work up. Because a person from this world can't jump from this world to higher levels. He has to slowly work up. Therefore, the first day, one candle, the second day, another candle, malin b'kedesh bein marid. We should all be zeche to a good Hanukkah, as tonight is the night when the greatest miracle took place. And just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed miracles for Yisrael in the past, so shall he perform miracles for Klal Yisrael in the present and in the future, until we zeche to the Bias HaMashiach. Amen.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za. Via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.